We were talking about administrative style, and you were commenting about how you saw yourself as a facilitator.
That's right. I see myself as having provided support and opportunity where it was appropriate and where it would be advantageous. I think of myself as being open, but able and willing to make hard decisions if necessary, where necessary. I believe in participative management, and I believe in anticipatory planning. I believe in planning that allows you to anticipate what might happen and to think about the consequences of actions. So many people make decisions, but they never think of the end consequences. And I think you have to anticipate what might be going to happen. And even sometimes when it's bad, what may be going to happen, you still have to make a decision, but at least you are ready for it.
So long-term planning's important.
Very much in my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I enjoy long-term planning. I enjoy financial planning. I think of myself as being open to new ideas and new techniques, willing to experiment. I really do believe it's important to recognize and to appreciate faculty contributions in all sectors, research, teaching, and service. They are all critically important and all valuable. And I do not believe in giving credit to one sector without giving credit to other sectors. I try to respect staff and other co-workers because they are the front face of any unit. Your secretary is more important than you are frequently in presenting a face
to these people.
I'm a very strong supporter of equity and diversity, to the point of arguing on behalf of equitable treatment in particular. I have a strong belief that a knowledgeable faculty is essential to wise decision-making within units and within colleges. I don't believe faculty who know nothing and understand less can make wise decisions. And I think when administration doesn't share with them sufficient information so that they can make wise decisions, that we have done our faculty a serious injustice. I feel the same way about politics. I'm willing to wait, if necessary, for faculty to comprehend unless change is necessary. And I'm willing to move ahead if it's essential when you can't wait. And I believe in calm despite all chaos, which sometimes takes some energy. One of the things that happens when you go into administration is that you carry a lot of responsibility that not very many people think about, faculty think about. One is you serve as a role model for all of the students, undergraduate and graduate, and you serve as a role model to some faculty. And so you try to support these people as best you can, verbally as well as financially, where it's possible. You need to make decisions that are within the context of the goals of MSU and of Michigan, the state of Michigan, where it is at all possible to do so. You are responsible for presenting the dynamic and pertinent nature of the college and its units to every audience you meet because you represent the college. You represent the college within the larger university at all times. When people see you, you are the college, and you can't get away from it. You have to argue the college cause to university and state leaders, and that's especially true when you're arguing for funding or additional faculty or space or anything of this sort. That you have to be there to support the faculty and to argue their cause. You need to be as objective as you can in evaluating program and personnel and situations. And probably the most difficult thing to be objective about is to evaluate situations, because sometimes interpersonal relations are very, very hard to evaluate what really went on. You become a national and a state and sometimes international spokesperson for the college and for the ideas within the college. And you have to handle crises that you never thought ever you'd be able to handle. And yet you have to handle it with knowledge and wisdom and serenity. And I'm not sure, but what serenity isn't the thing that goes first. You asked about dealings with the university, and I considered on the whole that my relations were good with the university.
While you were dean?
When I was dean, mm-hmm. And any other time. But it was very apparent that CHE was the home economics unit on campus and was in many ways viewed as the auxiliary of agriculture. It was frequently hard as a female dean to be heard. What I learned was if I had a really good idea, as every so often I had, that in order to get my idea on the table, I would feed it to a male dean. Very frequently, the male dean thought it was his own idea when he presented it, but once it was presented, I argued for it.
Was there one dean that was a conduit more than other?
Whatever works is what you use. I had a nice fight with Athletic Director Rogers when he was here, regarding the inadequacy of funding and space and equipment and coaching for women's athletics. I am not an athletic person, but I sure am supportive of women's rights. And gradually, over time, the deanery, as I call this collection of deans.
Deanery?
Yeah. Came to realize that Title IX was not going to go away. And the person who made, I think, the most impact on this was Cecil Mackey when he was here as president. And when I told him that shortly before he stepped down as president, he said, "Isn't that nice? You're one of the few people who ever noticed." Monies during my tenure were very tight. But generally, we were able to get money for renovations and for promotions and for salary adjustments. But what suffered was operational dollars. But the operational dollars were really severely cut. Sometimes we had gender issues which arose when a promotion was discussed. I don't like people who talk about the fact that a person should not receive a promotion because they are a wife and a mother, mm-hmm. and a woman. And so there were a couple of provosts that got some discussion as to whether this was not a biased decision. And I don't believe in that business.
Promotion based on merit?
I believe in promotion based on merit, and when you come with adequate merit documentation, and then the argument is, but that means that the wife will have a higher rank than the husband, and both are in the university. Mm-hmm. That's unacceptable. Mm. And the person involved learned it. Budgetary planning became a game in the university. And by the mid-80s, there was one time when all of us deans rewrote the APPNR, which is the annual planning document, 7 different times with 7 different little refinements. And all too frequently, I became aware that the reports that we were sending in were not studied. Provosts in particular were not aware of what the contents were and the proposals that were being made. And I found that discouraging and appalling. I also found that it was almost impossible to lead administration suggests that you're going to have some opportunity to do leading. And it was almost impossible to lead when time and monies were consumed by university projects of very limited value and of limited return. And these projects took precedence over academic programs. So at that point, I stepped down. And my interest now, when I became faculty member, returned to one of my favorite occupations, which was teaching, was to continue interest in consumer behavior and in administration of higher education. I continued serving as a consultant to programs of collegiate programs across the United States. But since 85, I really worked on two thrusts. One was to give attention to the market for food and for food services by mature consumers. That would be what you would call the elderly. Mm-hmm. And then to the development of a new undergraduate curriculum within FSHN. What I developed was a curriculum called Food: Technology and Management. And it was a curriculum developed jointly with the College of Business. It was first offered in 1992, and there were some 30 graduates by the time I retired in 96. And because when I retired, there were no monies to replace me in food science and human nutrition, the program was moved to become an option within the food science undergraduate program. And it continues in that regard today. This program was based on research, on research work that was done from funding by U.S. Department of Agriculture Challenge Grant, which Dr. Bobbitt and myself obtained from USDA. And as part of the work, this is a curriculum that in the senior courses, the course study was by case study. And I visited Harvard and Boston University and used their model of case approach and developed 20 cases, which was quite a task, which could be used in the senior classes in the FTN major. Also worked to develop an internship program for FTN majors, and that program was implemented. The thing that I was anxious about is that students have experience in decision making and in team working on decision making on actual problems that actually occurred in business. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, that they be given opportunities between their sophomore and junior and senior year in participating in internship programs someplace in the United States. About 80% of the students who took internship programs, their first initial job was within the company in which they'd done an internship. So it was a good move to participate in an internship because it was an initial step into career. You asked about philosophy of teaching. The one thing I have to say is that learning should be meaningful and it should be exciting. You should enjoy it. And when I studied higher education years ago, one of my professors said that education should be like two people sitting at two ends of a log. At one end of the log is the student, and at the other end of the log is a teacher. And over time, as a student learns and the teacher teaches, they should come together until they merge as one. And that concept of shared learning is a concept that I think is exciting not only to the student but also to the teacher. I believe teachers should help students to function by themselves. I've always stressed problem-oriented teaching. I think the case system is excellent for certain types of things that you want to do. It can stimulate independent and critical thinking, which I think is important. I think it's important to know your students, to confer with them, to listen to them, and to observe them, to see what they're doing and see what they're thinking. It's important to expect excellence and to expect work. And what I have observed is that students respect you for your expectations. They live up to what you hold in front of them. You asked about community involvement. For a number of years, for 14 years, I served on the board of directors of Consumers Power Company, now known as Consumers Energy. I served there from 1983 until 1997. And also served on a CMS Energy Board from 87 to 97. And stepped down from that in 97, retired at age 70 from that role. I really enjoyed that work and that interaction with an ongoing dynamic company that was an education in itself. It gave me an opportunity to expand my horizon as a consumer expert. And at first, when I was first approached, I thought to myself, oh my stars, I'm not sure I'm up to this because I don't own a big company and so forth. But they assured me that what I had to bring from an academic standpoint would be of value, and it was. Mm-hmm. It was. And the thing that tickled me was the university, when they heard that I had been asked, said, oh, go ahead and accept it. You've got to accept this. It's important for. And I said, well, but I may need some advice. We'll give you all the advice you need. Never heard from them again. also worked with the Michigan Office on Aging in a study of the consumer behavior of elderly. And interacted with numerous businesses in Michigan and throughout the United States in developing case studies and in developing the internship programs. And that was fun. I really enjoyed doing that. A lot of work, but I enjoyed doing it. And also started work with some of the nonprofits.
In the local area or statewide?
In the local area. Uh-huh. In developing endowment programs.
I see. So your experience in fundraising for the college
sectors,
worked?
No, not colleges. This would be nonprofits like churches.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. But I meant that, but your experience that you got in developing the endowment for the human ecology.
It's more sophisticated now than it was in those days, but it's the same kind of approach. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying that. You asked what my reflections were on my career at MSU. Well, by the time I stepped down as dean, my impression was the college was in better shape than when I came in. The college structure was administrable, and the funding was pretty sound in most areas. All of the chairpersons in place were strong and were experienced, which was not true. There was full staffing. There was a good balance among teaching and research and service. Most of the professional curriculums had been revised and approved and were appropriate. They were accredited. Research programs were in a strong growth mode after severe funding shortfalls. And of course, it's increased since then. Enrollments were stable and we were able to handle them. The off-campus offerings and the international contacts and relationships were strong. And the off-campus offerings in Okinawa has held up extremely well and been very profitable for all involved. The service programs, particularly those in cooperative extension, were highly functional when I left, but the funding and the organization of CES began to deteriorate and to change. And so there have been some changes, significant changes in that since. the endowment program and the development fund program was in a strong growth position for the first time. And now, of course, the personnel are hired to do only that, and so that's a good investment. Promotion and merit increases were competitive. I've commented about that. The computerization of the college and classrooms were completed. So in 1985, when I stepped down, it was a pretty good time to step down. Also, after I had done the APPNR 7 times, it was time to step down.
We just finished ours, by the way.
Yes, you understand.
So I know the feeling.
Yes, yes.
Not 7 times, though. We only
had to I tell you.
2 revisions.
I finally took to just reshaping the phrases and putting phrases in different places. As teaching faculty in FSHN, in Food Science and Human Nutrition, I did, in the time from 1985 to the end of 96, I was able to achieve the goal of establishing a functional university undergraduate major, stressing both food science and business. I consider that to be an terribly important relationship, because the food science students enter business, and unless they have some knowledge of business practices and business techniques and perceptions, all they're going to be is a technician. Mm-hmm. But that if they know these other things and can later on, if they wish, enter into a master's and MBA program, they can enter administration if they desire to do so. And so without that, they're handicapped. So this opens doors to students. We've obtained some research dollars to do this program, and the College of Business was very supportive in working with us. We had very good response from business. They were really interested in seeing this put into play. And so it was good to see that program was online, and I felt good that I had a job well done by the time I stepped out in 96. Mm-hmm. Then you asked about all the faculty with whom I've worked.
Not everyone, but.
I identified just a few people that I was particularly impressed with. One was Cliff Wharton, who was the president when I came, and was president for 5 years while I was here. Cliff was, his background was in agriculture and economics. He worked with the World Bank, and came from an ambassadorial family, so he had a vast international background. Cliff not only was an intellectual, but he was a highly cultured individual. And when you talk with him, you will enjoy it enormously. He handled all kinds of terrible problems, when especially with trying to get the student writing handled. And I thought he did very well. He and his wife also were instrumental in getting started a cultural revolution on this campus that occurred when Wharton Auditorium was created. And without them being here, I don't know. I think we'd still be shoveling. Cecil Mackey, I have great respect for. He was a president who came after Wharton. He was asked to come to reduce the size of programs here at MSU in accord with the funding base. And he did the job. There is no way to do a job in which you are asked to cut funding and be locked. I thought that he handled it extremely well. I think that when he went into the College of Business, his contributions there have been enormous, that he has lived above any indictments, and I think I'm really extremely gratified to watch his progress.
It's almost reminiscent of John Quincy Adams' experience, where
Absolutely.
Difficulty during
Absolutely.
Presidency and then made a greater contribution yes. in Congress, or yes. now as yes. going back in the faculty,
Absolutely.
Leading the faculty leader,
Absolutely.
He's had an important impact, or yes. A very important
yes. Yes.
on the
And I say to myself how sometimes someone has to come along who has the strength to achieve the changes that are necessary and take the guff.
Take the guff.
Take the guff. I liked Dorothy Arata, who was the assistant provost and was a professor in nutrition. She was straightforward, eyeball to eyeball. She told it like it was. Enormously intelligent. And I found her, when she said something, she meant it, and she delivered, which is not always true mm-hmm. with people in administration. Dick Lewis was the dean of the College of Business. He was just excellent in working with the establishment of the undergraduate program in food science and human nutrition. I had known Dick for a long time, and like him as an individual, have great respect for him, and he is a cooperative person. He's willing to listen and to find out where cooperation is possible.
And you were deans together at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I also liked Jim Anderson, who was the dean of the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. He also became a vice provost of ANR. Jim was an unusual dean of agriculture in that he listened and he valued what you said and weighed what you said and then made a decision, not off the cuff, but after study. He took the whole into perception, and I respected him for that. He also was a nice guy. Every so often you meet someone who's a nice guy. I thought John Cantlin, as a provost, was interesting. He also became vice president of research and graduate studies later, all of this when I was in office. John Cantlin really, truly supported the concept of human ecology in all of its multidisciplinarity and interdisciplinarity and all of this stuff. And he really wanted desperately to believe it would work. And I think had a lot to do with supporting these efforts, not financially, but verbally, because he really wanted so much for it to operate. And but I found him interesting in that regard, because at times when you were trying to discuss it, it's not administrable. Still, the dream was there.
Mm-hmm.
The dream was there. My associate dean, Norma Bobbitt, who I've commented about from time to time, is one of the smartest women I've ever known. Very bright, very work-oriented, I mean, just determined to make something work. She has been in more international locations than anybody I've ever known. She is a productive, distinguished person, and when she leaves the college, when she retires from the college, which is not now, but in the future, the college will be very short of an individual. That's very significant. But I want to tell you about a person who was not in the college when I was there, but whom I met later, and that is Mary Lewis. Mary Lewis was a professor in child nutrition. She was what I would call a true intellectual and a humble scholar. We went out to California to a series of meetings and met with two emeriti out there. One emeriti was a person who was internationally recognized and knew it, who had all the accoutrements that academic people have, and had arrived. Mary Lewis lived on the top floor of second floor of a very small house. She had a living room kitchen and a bedroom and a bathroom. Very simply, you talk about voluntary simplification. This was voluntary simplification. And she was well into her 80s. Every day, she did not have a car. Every day, she went to the library to study and to write. And she continued this